Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
Wow, so quite a start. I'm going to have to give Ms. Duker some credit there. You know, usually on the round table, I'm trying to shut her up, but I just wanted her to go this afternoon.
And she was on fire.
She was on fire. I read a great column from Josh Hammer, and I want him to describe what it was about here as we welcome him into the fold. You hear his show on Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m. here on 97.1 FM Talk. He's a Newsweek senior editor at large. And there's even more to talk about than when you wrote this column about some issues here today, Josh. But how are you on this Monday? We're fired up here in St. Louis, I will tell you that.
Mark, I'm doing great as always. It's always a pleasure to join you.
So I want you to kind of tell the story the way you did in the column, because I was coming back from an overseas trip last week. I didn't know about some of these ICE raids at some restaurants. I also am discovering, because of your column, that some of the powerful media people, the elite media people, own lots of restaurants. That's kind of interesting, isn't it?
Funny how that works. So this was in the nation's capital. This is in Washington, D.C. last week. And look, there's so much happening in the news cycle right now that I think you would be more than forgiven for missing this story. But there was this the situation where in the nation's capital, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, decided to raid at least 9 restaurants. Now, Washington, D.C. is a so-called sanctuary city, meaning that they direct their local law enforcement to not assist the feds when it comes to enforcing immigration law. So the mere fact that the feds have raids, and I'm using the term of the mainstream media, raid here, Mark,
right.
In reality, an ICE raid sometimes is going to be like, smashing the door, you know, where's the criminal alien kind of situation, like a SWAT team style. But typically speaking, we're talking here about agents that show up with paperwork and a briefcase and basically just say, like, show me your immigration documentation. So the media was flipping out that there were at least 9 different ICE raids. And it turns out that a handful of these raids were in, shall we say, restaurants that seem to be a little politically connected to forces not particularly sympathetic to the Trump administration. In particular, there was one restaurant that is owned by a man by the name of Jeff Tracy. He's the husband of the CBS News anchor Nora O'Donnell. She was one of the co-moderators in the J.D. Vance Tim Walz vice presidential debate last October. And there was a second restaurant that is owned by the former Biden White House chief of staff, Jeffrey Zients. And then you had a third that is owned by Jose Andres, who is a very well-known Spanish restaurant owner and quite a left-wing activist. So you have a lot of people saying, is the Trump administration weaponizing law enforcement? Are they politicizing the rule of law? And the entire purpose of my column, Mark, is basically to just kind of say, please. Where have you guys been for the past 4 years?
Well, let me just interrupt real quickly, because I love this line, and this is what I really hung on to, and I tweeted this out. I think you know this over the weekend. You said, you know, was this politically motivated? Maybe, maybe not. Regardless, and with all due respect to the pearl clutchers, permit a moment of unfettered bluntness. I simply do not care. And I could not have related more with that statement. I simply do not care. Now, you explained why you don't care, and I want you to do that now. But I think a lot of listeners right now are right there with you, Josh.
Totally. And this was a moment of unfettered bluntness in my weekly syndicated column, because I think sometimes you just have to just be extremely blunt. I do not give the smallest crap in the world, frankly.
Thank you.
I just don't. I mean, I am not going to lose a second of sleep when it comes to ICE agents showing up at Jose Andres's restaurant to ask for immigration papers when the same people are clutching their pearls and had nothing to say whatsoever when Steve Bannon and Peter Navarro were literally going to jail, when J6ers who traipsed into the U.S. Capitol because the door was open were put in solitary confinement. Above all, when Donald Trump himself was prosecuted by Joe Biden's own Department of Justice. These people had nothing to say about that. Nothing, 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 nothing. And frankly, I think if you want to talk about the origins of the modern politicization of law enforcement, you could actually go back prior to Joe Biden. The Biden administration really ramped it up to the next level for sure in many, many ways. The Merrick Garland, parental rights, critical race theory memo. There's a million examples there. But you can go back even further in the column, Mark, to the Obama administration. This is what I argue there. I mean, let's not forget that Lois Lerner, when she was the director of the Obama-era IRS, she publicly admitted back then in 2013, that was 12 years ago now, but she publicly admitted to targeting conservative Tea Party groups when it comes to trying to strip them of their tax-exempt status.
Yep.
I mean, the Obama administration sued Catholic nuns. They sued the Little Sisters of the Poor. They literally sued these elderly, octogenarian, little old lady nuns in federal court trying to force them to violate their Catholic faith and subsidize abortifacient. So don't give me this crap. Don't give me this about the politicization of the rule of law. I'm not having it. I suspect the American people are not having it either.
I'm not having it at all. And that's why that really resonated with me. Now, you addressed this in the column. You said, look, there's going to be some people that say, well, look, it's just whataboutism. You know, two wrongs don't make a right, et cetera.
Yeah, so look, I mean, that is kind of elementary school logic, right? That two wrongs don't make a right. And that's true insofar as it goes. But, you know, anyone who's ever studied any economics probably knows, or at least has heard of, game theory. And game theory is essentially you try to play out how multiple actors are going to relate to one another in various different scenarios. So if actor A does A, then actor B will respond with B. And you kind of you try to game out how it's going to look like on a geopolitical or even just kind of a micro chessboard. And anyone who knows anything about game theory knows that unilateral disarmament is never going to work. Where you have a foe, and let's be very clear, the side here that is trying to prosecute nuns to force them to subsidize abortifacients, the side that is putting grandmothers who were at the Capitol on January 6th in solitary confinement, the side that it is prosecuting Donald Trump, putting Steve Bannon in jail and so forth, they are the aggressors here. It's simple game theory that if you unilaterally disarm, they're just going to keep on coming at you with everything they got. And the only way that I can possibly think of to try to ultimately unwind and de-escalate tensions, and this is a little ironic or paradoxical, you might say, but I think it happens to be true, it's actually going to take short-term escalation in the service of a mid- to long-term stasis or equilibrium. You basically, Mark, have to, proverbially speaking, bloody up some noses a little bit there. They have to know that the right is willing and able, dare I say at times even eager, to get their hands a little dirty simply to send a message, a shot across the bow, that we're not going to take it anymore. And God willing, at some point when that message has been delivered, then we can all kind of drop our guns in this grand Mexican standoff and get back to a true rule of law. Now, I'm a lawyer, Mark. I clerk for a federal appeals judge. Right. I'm a constitutionalist. I hate the fact that this is where we're at. I lament it. I wish that we were not here. I'm just trying to be realistic about where we're at, though.
And I appreciate the honesty. Now, I can kind of segue in a strange way, maybe, into this whole issue of Qatar giving, you know, the jet to the U.S., and maybe not everyone's caught up about that, but I'm you know, tooling around last night, getting ready for some show stuff, and I see this story, and then there's, you know, Jonathan Carl does the story, and it's the biggest outrageous thing that Trump's ever done. But, you know, maybe I do have an opinion in the end where that's problematic. But I really don't know, because I can't trust the information that's coming from the legacy media on any of this because of everything you kind of just mentioned.
Right. So they are clearly trying to get Trump. I mean, these are the people that are trying to get Trump. And again, it may or may not be legitimate. I happen to have a lot of issues with the country of Qatar. I wish that we treated Qatar, frankly, as a state sponsor of terrorism and not as a major non-NATO ally, which is what the Biden administration formally designated them as back in 2022. So I am no fan of this quote-unquote gift from Qatar. I mean, talk about a modern-day 21st century Trojan horse.
Right.
But to your point, yeah, I mean, this is the same administration that, you know, I mean, if Donald Trump farts in the wrong direction, they're going to say it's a constitutional crisis or it's like a mini insurrection within the White House there, right? I mean, you just can't trust what you're getting at. And by the way, you know, a side note to that whole point about the breakdown in trust in our would-be media gatekeepers in the vanguards of truth and so forth there. You know, a lot of people on cable news in the major papers, they lament how you've had the rise of this whole alternative media sphere, the podcasters, the YouTubers. The Trump White House is basically credentialing a lot of them there. And I'm hearing a lot of folks from traditional media sources lament that.
Oh, yeah.
And the reality, though, is you guys only have yourselves to blame for that, because by so shooting yourselves in the foot and degrading your own credibility, you have made this necessary. If only you had conducted yourselves in a more intellectually honest fashion, perhaps we wouldn't be here in the first
place. But do you think any of them realize that? Like, do you think Nora O'Donnell even thinks about that for one moment?
I don't. I, yeah. They should, but no, I don't.
So on another separate but related, because Hamas released the last living American hostage today, Eden Alexander, after some mediation. And President Trump, I think, certainly was mentioning this earlier today. What are your thoughts on that and just the current situation in Israel right now?
Well, look, it's obviously a tremendous thing when a hostage gets released. I mean, this poor young man, I mean, just horrific. I mean, well over 500 days in captivity with some of the most barbaric thugs on the face of the earth. I mean, you know, thank God that he's alive, that he's back with his family. Right. I mean, this is heartwarming stuff on a human level. Now, the cynic in me has to wonder, though, what was the implied quid pro quo here?
Right.
So the United States apparently essentially did this through back channels, negotiating with Hamas, I guess, an apparent violation of the proverbial rule about negotiating with terrorists. And I wonder what the United States is going to do in return, right? And then you kind of couple this with what we were just talking about, this Boeing 747 quote-unquote gift from Qatar, which are the number one bankrollers and funders of Hamas. I really do wonder what the next move is going to be. And my worry, my concern is that this could result in President Trump and Special Envoy Witkoff then kind of turning to Israel in turn and saying, okay, you got this hostage back. Now it's time for you to kind of put a definitive timeline to end this war on our terms. And Israel's not going to do that. They can't do that there. So I do worry about at what cost this might have come. But look, I mean, you know, I as a young-ish man myself, you know, when I see a young guy freed from captivity from these utter, just the worst savages you can ever think of in your entire lives, it's obviously something to celebrate.
And he was taken that furry first day on October 7th, right? He was on the original attack.
Yeah, no, totally. He's been there since day one. And credit to his family for never losing a single day to not plead their case, to not remind our public officials of him being there. And, you know, one of the things that this whole hostage release, I think, underscores is that, look, October 7th was obviously primarily an assault on Israel. There's no doubt about that. But you look at the nationalities of the other folks who were either murdered or taken hostage. I forgot the exact number, but it was like 30 or 40, maybe even 50 different nationalities of people who had their citizens either slaughtered or taken hostage there. I mean, it was a large number of people that were killed. At that music festival alone, the Nova Music Festival, people flew in from all over Europe to attend that festival there. And the United States had well over three dozen individuals who were either killed or taken hostage, which made October 7, 2023, on its own terms, the single largest American hostage crisis since Tehran 1979, the whole Jimmy Carter Iran hostage crisis. So, you know, that's kind of been my response since day one to a lot of folks who kind of look at this conflict and they say, America first, I don't care. Well, I mean, I'm sorry, but there has been a distinctly and unambiguously American component to this particular crisis ever since day one as well.
Josh Hammer is here. So one more topic I'm just curious about, because I mentioned I was out of the country and I didn't follow all of the news. But one of the things I noticed before I left a couple of weeks ago, and I've noticed this the entire, you know, winter, certainly the past few months, is there's this Gaza is starving story about how bad the hunger is with the palace.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Palestinians, and it's, you know, brutal. But I've also seen some stuff since I've been back about questioning whether the media is even accurate on some of that stuff. Again, it fits in with all the themes that we're talking about.
Well, look, the media, when it comes to this issue, and not just post October 7th, by the way, ever since Hamas first took over in Gaza, the media has had a terrible, terrible habit of just repeating what Hamas says as if it is mother's milk. The problem, the obvious problem, is that Hamas is a genocidal jihadist organization, a U.S.-recognized foreign terrorist organization, and guess what? They lie. They lie just like various other very bad, evil actors do there. So when it comes to everything from food supply to casualties to the percentage of the people who have killed, have been combatants versus civilians, children, men, you simply cannot believe. You simply cannot believe what they say. And I find it unbelievable, Mark, as someone who has followed this conflict for a long time, I find it just unbelievable that I and others just have to repeat this, because we've been saying it for so long. And yet, as you said, they never learn their lesson. The same way that Nora O'Donnell is never asking herself whether or not they are to blame for the rise of alternative media, so too these people are never looking in the mirror and saying, should I quote the Hamas Ministry of Health as if it is the equivalent of the United States Department of Health and Human Services? I mean, maybe not there, but they're never asking their questions because... I frankly don't know why, but I guess I don't know why either.
But then you also had, this is something else I'm kind of catching up on, this whole nonsense on these university campuses and Columbia University, that's rearing its ugly head again.
It is, but the Trump administration is doing an excellent job on this front. They really are. I truly, truly applaud, actually, what the administration is doing when it comes to the issue of higher ed there, this righteous attempt to frankly belittle. You know, there's actually a public virtue sometimes in trying to belittle institutions that are trying to subvert the common good. And that's kind of very kind of like, I guess, higher level way of saying it. But you look at institutions like Harvard and Columbia, and, you know, once upon a time, these universities were serving the common good. They were producing good citizens. It's very difficult to look at Harvard and Columbia now and conclude that they're doing anything other than undermining the country and undermining the common good. And frankly, there's something to be said for trying to subvert and undermine them in response. That's basically what Donald Trump is doing there. But in so doing, he's also taking a deeply popular stance, which is that the American people shouldn't be subsidizing you. I mean, it's as common sense as it gets. I mean, I'm sorry, but someone who is sweating to make a living in proverbial flyover country, you know, including here in St. Louis, Missouri. I mean, really, does the median American want to subsidize their hard-earned dollars to Harvard University? Are you kidding me? Yeah. I mean, this is a deeply popular issue for the Trump administration. Well, it's good policy as well.
I could fold this in also, because we have elected officials, we have mayors, we have members of Congress that are going to bat for migrants who aren't legally here in this country, some of whom are criminals, and they don't really want to address the American people and the people that are actually taxpayers. That remains to be stunning, that that's a lesson that the left has not, you know, learned from this election.
Well, they have a lot of lessons, frankly, that they have not learned from their lesson. I mean, I was watching Joe Biden on the View last week,
Yeah.
I mean, clearly they have not learned any lessons. The fact that they're still trotting out this guy. I mean, at what point does Jill Biden get tried in the court of public opinion for elder abuse, for what she is doing to her husband?
It should have happened last summer. We know that. Josh Hammer, awesome. Thank you so much for bringing the fire. We're off and running here on two great guests. So thank you, Josh. We'll talk again soon.
Looking forward to it.
All right. And you can hear a show every Saturday, 1 p.m. right here on 97.1 FM Talk. I do have some great media reaction audio to get to. We got Sue's News in the next hour.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer, where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because, like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.